Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli and Tim Maurer.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Timothy Maurer got a call today by CNBC Nightly Business Report and said, hey, we want you to come down and talk about a topic with us on air tonight. And so we said, you go on down. I got a great guest tonight to talk to, and I'll take care of the show tonight. Next week he'll be on the air. I believe he's going to be talking to Eileen Ambrose, and they're going to be talking about personal financial subjects. So you might know that name, Eileen, for she is the personal finance journalist for the Sun Papers, and that's where you might have heard that name before. But tonight I am going to be talking to Farrier Stillman, and she is a family law attorney with Tidings Rosenberg here in the Baltimore area. She's my go-to person when it comes to family law, and you might wonder, well, what is family law? Well, they call it family law because it encompasses lots of things, but the main thing it covers is divorce law, and, you know, it's not a nice topic. It's not a nice way to say it, divorce attorney. That's got such a negative ring to it. I like family law. That's got a beautiful ring to it. So, and tonight it is my birthday, isn't it, Noah? Tonight's actually the day of my birth. It's not this week. It's today, July 31st, the year of great American births. Anyway, remember that, Noah, next year, because you don't have a gift tonight. So next year you'll have one. All right, Noah. We're going to talk to Farrier now. So no more music. All right. So, Farrier, are you there with me?
I sure am.
Well, good to have you. And wanted to, you know, do you agree that family law, that just sounds so much nicer?
That's why we call it that.
But it does involve a lot more than just divorce nowadays, doesn't it?
It sure does. It also includes premarital agreements, adoptions, postmarital agreements, guardianships, and even custody and child support cases if the parents weren't married.
Yeah, and I guess would it now also encompass all this new law in Maryland for same-sex marriage and so forth?
It sure would.
So your division, your family law practice, is the one that's going to be covering all that new law?
Absolutely, because the laws are now the same for both traditional couples and same-sex couples.
And now with DOMA being knocked down by the Supreme Court and Maryland being a state that recognizes it, it makes it critical. You're going to have a real significant issue here in Maryland under that.
That's absolutely true. Not only do you have all the state law that has changed, but federal law, too. So there's a huge sea change in tax laws, retirement benefits, military benefits, really the thousand-some federal laws that affect married people.
Right. So the topics we want to talk about, though, we're gonna open it up. Tonight is an open show, and Farrier is here to answer your questions if you have questions about family law. And we just went over what those topics can be. It can be prenuptial agreements. You know, you're getting married, and that's a big topic nowadays, Farrier, isn't it? You've got these boomer generation. They're getting into second and third marriages in their 50s and 60s. I can't tell you how many clients I've had get married in the last few years in their 60s and 70s. They're bringing these families together and these assets together. And there's a lot of nervousness as to, not necessarily from a divorce point of view, but more from an estate planning point of view. Are you finding a lot of that now?
I am. And premarital agreements can help people with estate planning and or divorce. You could do a premarital agreement that had nothing to do with divorce. It's only for estate planning. Most people want to enter into a premarital agreement because they have children from a prior marriage to protect, obligations to, you know, children from a prior marriage, and also people are getting married later, so they're more likely to enter a marriage with significant assets.
Right, right. And, you know, it is the premarital agreement is important for if the marriage were to dissolve. But I like to tell people, you know, look, if you're going into a prenuptial because you're worried about divorce, maybe you're best not to get married. You don't want to hear that, though, do you?
Well, I think it's an important thing for a couple to consider. Why are they entering into it, and what does it mean?
Yeah. You know, it is an amazing diversity of good things and bad things if you stay single each, and good things and bad things that happen if you get married, isn't it?
That's absolutely true. The law gives protections to married people that it doesn't give to single people, but it also gives protections to single people that it doesn't give to married people.
For example, the staying single, if you're worried about long-term care, you definitely want to lean towards staying single as opposed to actually tying the knot, don't you?
Well, yes, because of the rules that, while not as bad as they used to be, can still, if not impoverished, really hurt your spouse financially if you're going to go into a nursing home and it's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, and your prenuptial agreement does not protect. If I've got $500,000 of assets and my spouse that I married had $50,000 of assets and they go into a nursing home and they eat into their whole $50,000 of assets, even though I did a prenuptial, Medicaid says I've got to spend down to $125,000 or so.
That's true. Prenuptial agreements can help you with a lot, but they really can't protect you against the federal government.
And for long-term care and so forth.
Definitely. I mean, people are much better off buying long-term care insurance or doing other estate planning than they are thinking a premarital agreement will protect them from Medicaid.
But, you know, you take a couple that I just had, you know, they were, I think she was 74 and he was 76. You can't afford long-term care insurance if you're bringing assets together. And I have to warn them, you know, but you got the whole ethical topic, too. The whole moral topic as to what does a person believe about being, united with another person as to whether they should be married or single. And if they decide that in their mind they have to be married, it changes everything, even though financially it might be significantly to their detriment.
Well, I think in that case they should consult with a good financial planner such as yourself and an estate planning lawyer, because there's a financial and legal aspect, and they should absolutely do that before they tie the knot.
Right. Well, Farrier, we got to take our first break, and I'm not allowed to use that word anymore, right, Noah? But we're going to take our first break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to open up the lines to anybody who wants to call in. It's 410-922-6680. If you want to ask Farrier a question, you've got probably one of the best family law attorneys here in Maryland to call and ask any of your questions on any of these topics, and we'll be right back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, in this with Terry Trey. Take it away, Terry.
WCBM. Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
That's true, Noah. It's my birthday, too. Right? Matter of fact, Paul called today at the office and played this song just for us. Anyway, we're here at Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Farrier Stillman, Tidings Rosenberg. She's with their family law practice. You're a partner there with that, right?
Yes, I am.
You're the head of the family law practice.
Well, I'm co-chair.
Look, I've moved you up a notch.
I appreciate the promotion.
Anyway, if you want to call in and ask your question about family law, it's 410-922-6680. So it deals with prenuptials or premarital agreements, postmarital agreements. I just saw one of them recently for a client. It deals with custody, guardianship. It deals with divorce, you know, and there's a lot of issues there that you can deal with. But we're going to go to Ken in Hunt Valley first and see what he has to ask. Ken, go ahead and ask your question.
Thanks a lot. My question is, let's say two people have been living together for a long period of time. You know, there's law in other states about palimony. You know, let's say one of the people are very wealthy, one is not. So I'm just wondering what the if there's any Maryland law on that. Like California probably has something.
That's a really good question. Maryland law does not allow palimony.
Because we don't recognize common law marriage, is that right?
Exactly, Drew.
Right. So you don't have to worry, Ken.
That's great. Well, I can sleep well tonight then.
as long as you don't wake up in a stupor one morning at the altar somewhere, you're in good shape, Ken.
Well, it wasn't for me, it was for
I'm just kidding.
Someone else in that. I know. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Take care.
All right.
All right, now we're going to my friend Michael in Northwest Baltimore. Michael, you got to have a serious question or I'll hang up on you. Go ahead.
I have a serious question.
Go ahead.
It has to do with when these same-sex couples, so-called married couples nowadays, want to visit one or the other loved one in the hospital, and law now protects them or will protect them in doing so to the detriment of the relationship that they have with their own parents and family members, inasmuch as the family members oftentimes in normal situations resent and reject a chosen partner for their child.
So that's the question you're asking is, what does the family have right in the hospital situation and so forth if somebody has a partner and the family disagrees with it and they're in a hospital-type scenario?
Yeah, how can they prevent that person that they highly resent and reject from supplanting them when they're blood relatives?
Well, I guess that's the advanced directive law there. Wouldn't it be Farrier?
Yes. You're exactly right, Drew. What the person who's in the hospital can do, preferably before they go into the hospital, is do an advanced directive and healthcare powers of attorney, saying that they want their whole family, specific family members, to be able to visit them. Because if they don't have that or they don't give other written instructions to the hospital, then the same-sex spouse has the same rights as a traditional spouse, and that is to decide who can come visit the patient in the hospital.
Right, but I think where Michael's coming from is, yeah, they want them to come, but these people don't want to be there when this person's there. And that's the, you know, he's saying, do they have any right to say, well, you have to leave because we're going then, you know? I don't know that sounds like, you know, you gotta get real with life, you know? Anyway,
yeah.
Michael's off the line right now. I understand his point, though, so we're just going to go on with Michael on the Beltway. Michael, how can we help you?
Yes, please.
Custodial accounts.
I beg your pardon?
Custodial accounts.
Yes. As part of a divorce agreement 10 years ago, a custodial account was established for a minor.
Okay.
And then one, woman, the wife, the ex-wife died, and she was actually a friend of the custodian. And since she died, the remaining parent didn't receive any information what has happened with the custodial account. Letters were written, and she even happens to be a law librarian here, but it does not matter. The child will be 18 now, and I thought under the law, the custodian had to provide information what was happening to the account. And as I said, the child will be 18 next year. So what can be done?
Okay, that's a good question. Farrier?
When the child becomes an adult, they have the right, he or she has the right, to go to the bank or account holder and get all the information about the account, because a typical custodial account is set up to end when someone's 18. Now, an account can be set up, it's more like a trust or custodial account, that doesn't turn over until a child is 21. So the rights are the child's, and it really depends on their age.
But the child does, or the guardian of the child, if the child's the adult and they're 18, and even if the account goes to 21, that child would have a legal right to petition the courts to prove that the custodian has handled the account in a fiduciary manner. Is that not true?
That's true, and that until the child is 18, that right belongs to their
guardian,
their remaining parent.
Right, right. But, it better be a big account, though.
I guess you have to get an attorney to deal with that person. She refuses to provide any information, and the child has been paying taxes on whatever other income the child has.
Well, wait a minute, Michael. Let me ask you a question. When the custodian died, who was appointed?
No, the custodian didn't die.
Oh, okay. Who died?
The mother.
Oh, the mother died. So the custodian is alive.
As far as I know.
Okay. Well.
And the custodian's a third party?
I beg your pardon?
The custodian is a third party, not the child's dad.
Right. Absolute stranger. I mean, known to us, but not related in any way.
Well, who's got guardianship of the child right now?
I have.
Okay, so you have a legal right to petition the guardian, but you would have to get a lawyer, go to court, and ask a judge to put an order on the custodian to tell him. Do I got that right, Ferrier?
You do, because the custodian has a fiduciary duty to protect the account and manage it in a way that's in the best interest of the child.
And if Michael wants to ask the custodian for money to buy the kid a car or to pay his car insurance, the custodian has to turn the money over to the child if it's not for a non-parental obligation. Would that not be true?
Well, it really depends on the rules when the account was set up. I mean, some custodial accounts are for any, legitimate need of the child. Others are only for certain needs like education. So it all depends on how the account was.
Oh, yeah, because this was forced on a divorce decree, right? So that makes sense. That would make sense. So, yeah, Michael, you'd have to get an attorney to force the issue if you want to do it.
The problem is it starts at $40,000. Because she didn't answer anything. Forget about paying for anything over the last decade. Nothing.
Well, I got to run. Good question. I give you your answer. I think it's a good question. We're going to Mark in Towson. Mark, how can we help you?
I had a question about postmarital agreements, whether or not there was a prenuptial. Is there any? Are they well established in Maryland, or is there any question? I mean, these might be disruptive to the marital bonds.
You said a postmarital agreement, or
post. Whether or not you have a premarital in existence. In other words, if you could have one, I guess that would modify a premarital, or you may not have a premarital. And
how does Maryland handle postmarital's barrier?
Well, Maryland law does recognize postmarital agreements. You just have to make sure that they're written in a way that complies with the law on postmarital agreements, including but not limited to full disclosure, consideration, fairness, issues like that.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yep, that answers it.
All right, sir. Good question. Well, we have to take another timeout. How's that for a word instead of break, Noah? We're going to take a timeout, and we're going to Terry Trey and Traffic. We're coming back to Ferrier Stillman. If you want to get on the line, we have a couple open lines, 410-922-6680. Call in. Take it away, Terry.
Happy, happy birthday, baby.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Is this like your Marilyn Monroe version of Happy Birthday, Noah? All right, Noah. That's a good one. There's another one out there. The Beatles and I can't remember. There's somebody else that I always liked that did Happy Birthday. Anyway, we're going to Valerie. Valerie, you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead and ask your question. Farrier's with us. Go ahead and ask.
Okay. It's a little complicated, but I'll try to do the best I can. Okay. I have a child, and when he was like, I don't know, a year old, I went to live with my brother and my sister-in-law, and I eventually, I guess, did a family adoption because they couldn't have children, and the father was abusive, so I had left him, and everything was fine. I saw my son all the time. Well, Barb, which was his wife, passed away, but I promised her that I would go through with the family adoption, and it was my brother. It was, you know, I took him on vacations. The long and short of it is that my brother met this woman and married her and moved her Mongoloid children into his home with my son, and my son would tell me certain things that had happened. Well, back when he was 7, he'll be 13, back when I had him on Christmas, and he was telling me that Dusty had grabbed him by the shirt, and when I confronted and he ripped the shirt. When I confronted my brother, he acted like it was no big deal, and then after that, he wouldn't let me see my son. Now, I had paperwork, you know, drawn up. Well, actually, he did. He had the paperwork drawn up. And I was given the paperwork, and my mom had passed away, but at this time, she was still alive, and she kept trying to get me to sign it. And I said, you know, no, because it didn't, I said, the name's not right, and it didn't reserve my rights. So I got paperwork back, and I have it. And the final decree, you know, that they file, it said everything it should. It said reserving all rights unto the natural mother, Valerie Belonga of Gavin. It said child Gavin Chafinski Belonga. So my mom passed away. We, you know, it was just really a bad time. Barb passed away. My brothers weren't coming around. And my mother had apparently had the paperwork. And I just say God is good because I was going through some paperwork at my mom's house. And I found the final decree that Kearney, the lawyer my brother used, sent to my brother to his house in Glen Burnie. And in his, what he filed,
right. Now let's get to the chase of it, Valerie. So you just want to know, how do you make sure that you have your rights still, or do you want to actually take your son back?
No, I want, okay. I've hired lawyers. I hired his, you know, and I paid thousands of dollars, and they act like it's, my brother left the state.
Okay.
5 years ago. He just felt left. Didn't tell me anything.
Okay, so let's ask Farrier, you know, so you just want the rights to be able to stay up with your son, visit with him, and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Farrier, what do you suggest?
Well, I can't obviously give specific advice to Valerie on her case.
Oh, come on, Farrier.
But I can tell you generally that an adoption decree does terminate the rights of the biological parents, but if there has not been a final adoption decree, then a parent whose child is essentially living with another person may have custodial rights and other rights. And I think Valerie needs to take the paperwork she has to either the adoption agency they dealt with or a good family law attorney or even the adoption and trust clerk in the county in which she lives and try to get a clear answer as to what her legal rights are.
I'm sorry, I want to interrupt. Let me just say this real quick. That's a problem because now they're telling me, the lawyers are telling me I have to go after Kearney because of the fact that my final decree said it reserves my rights. The one he filed, you can see where they took that sentence out. So now all the lawyers I talk to say I have to go after him because he committed fraud, basically.
Well, let me just ask you a quick question, Valerie. Do you have any ability that you would want to, you know, have your son back?
Absolutely. And I have proof that this attorney committed fraud.
Well, let me ask you this, Farrier. Does this boy is going to become 14, does that give him some legal rights for a child that, if I've understand this stuff correctly?
No. A 16-year-old child can himself file for custody, but a 14-year-old isn't legally treated like a child of any other, is legally treated like a child of any other age under 16.
Really? I thought it was 14 for some reason. But then again, that's why you're the family law attorney and I'm just a generalist.
Well, can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Okay. I understand, I'm sorry, what she is, you're saying about that, but this is the issue. I didn't give up my rights. I would have never given up my rights. As a matter of fact, I had the letter from Kearney, who's in Towson, because I wouldn't sign the papers. I have a letter, and I have everything to prove it, that he sent back. And in the letter, it says the changes that were made. Because I wouldn't sign it, and it says in there about the changes. And he sent it back to me and said he made the changes, and that's where it said all my rights were. I would have never given my son up.
Right.
Never. So,
well, Farrier, what else do you want to, anything else you want to give to Valerie, you know?
Sure. Again, while I can't comment on your specific case, Valerie, I can tell you that there are only two ways that a person's parental rights can be terminated. Either the mother herself has to do it voluntarily, or the court has to essentially find that she's unfit and terminate her rights. So I really think you need to take this paperwork.
Okay. Well, what should I? Okay, because, you know, I'm not going to start getting all upset, but I am devastated every single day. I mean, I have my son since he was born and up to 7 years. He just lived out of my life. And I just want to see him. You know, and I don't know what he told my son. You know, I don't know that. My brother hates me and wants me dead. He married this really bad woman. I know, I went to South Carolina to see him. And the good thing is that my brother, when I went to South Carolina, he tried to have me arrested. They didn't. Of course, they couldn't. Well, I got a call from a police officer down there. I thought something was wrong because I called Gavin's school. And the police officer, Officer McMillan, my brother filed a complaint that we were phone harassing him, which we weren't. I called my son's school. My sister had called his house. I said, and that's not phone harassment. Long story short, I have become friends with him now. And I talked to him. He had a chance to check on Gavin. What? I just don't understand why somebody can't do something to help me with this.
Well, Valerie, if you want to, if you hang up, Perry will give her phone number out. You can contact her, and she may be able to help you. All right?
I mean, I'll pay for it.
All right?
Okay. All right.
All right. I guess you get that a lot, you know, people who have these really difficult situations in life.
Yes. I mean, every family law attorney does, and it's very, very sad, but without, you know, actually reviewing the legal pleadings and court orders, it's very hard to give advice in a vacuum.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. You give her your phone number now, and if she wants to contact you, you can review the things and give her specific advice.
Of course, I would be glad to. My phone number is 410-752-9731.
So you always give it twice when you're on the radio, Farrier.
Okay, that's a good tip. 410-752-9731.
All right. So if anybody wants to get in touch with Farrier or Valerie, if you want to contact her directly to look into this specifically and see if there is a way to work with it, you know, like over the radio, it's very difficult. And she'd be more than happy to do that with you. Noah, what do you want to do? Let's just go to Mark Thibodeau, okay? And then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Richard and Leanne. And I have Farrier Stillman with me, and we probably could handle one more call if you want to get on, 410-922-6680. If you want to talk with Farrier before the show is over, right now I'm going to find out what's happening with the weather and Mark Thibodeau.
Happy, happy birthday, baby.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
That's the best you can do for my birthday? You know? All right, man. Well, I'll know where you stand, Noah. Okay. We're here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we have Farrier Stillman. She's a family law attorney with Tidings and Rosenberg here in Baltimore, and she's answering questions on family law. And Farrier, again, what's that phone number, 410-752-9731. Yep.
That's 410-752-9731.
We're going to Richard in Baltimore. Richard, how can we help you?
Good evening, Mr. Tillman and Tignanelli and Ms. Stillman. My concerns are trying to find out how considerate are the rules in Maryland in calculating child support and consideration of fairness to each party involved, you know, what's involved, savings accounts, checking, 401ks, and so forth. And the second part, the division of assets. Like if you sell a house for $10,000, is everything 50-50 split? So if you sell...
All right, Richard, let's hear. Farrier, go ahead.
So in Maryland, we have something called the Child Support Guidelines, which are presumptively correct. It's a formula that the court uses to determine child support for any parents whose combined income is is $180,000 a year or less. If their combined income is more than that, then the court has more discretion. We are not a 50-50 state. We are what's called an equitable distribution state. So the court looks at a number of factors in determining how to divide marital property.
Okay. So how's that for an answer, Richard?
That was good for the first part. So therefore, if a house has to be sold, it's not 50-50. It would be an equitable distribution, you're saying, Ms. Stillman?
Well, no, because a house, it really depends on title. There are two things. There's the marital rights and there's title. If a house is jointly owned by the husband and wife and it's sold, the net proceeds do have to be divided equally. But one party may owe a monetary award to the other party that might be paid out of their half of the proceeds, depending on how the other assets are divided.
Interpreting that in English for you, Richard, is he might have a 401k plan with $50,000 in it, and he owes her $20,000 of it, let's say,
yeah.
And she may decide that you keep your $50,000 and I'll keep more of the house.
Well,
is that what you said to Farrier?
Yes, and you translated it wonderfully.
And by chiming in, you explained it better. Well, not better, but for me.
Different.
The other part is, what if there's a loss? If you sell a house for less than you owe, is that split?
Yes. I mean, if the house is jointly owned, then both are going to be what we lawyers call jointly and severally liable for the deficiency, which in English means the bank can go after both of you.
Yeah, so they can take 100% from one, and you got to fight the other spouse for your 50%. Good question, Richard. I have to run on, and I want to get Leanne, because this is a great question, I think, also. Leanne, how can we help you?
Hi. I have a stepdaughter who lives with us, and she has a child, and she's lived with us since the child was 4 months old. She is... threatening to make a bad decision in regards to the way her father and I feel and move in with a man who she's known for 4 months and take her child with her. I should also say that it would be over the state lines into Virginia. Is there any recourse on guardianship or anything that we would have as grandparents who have been living with this child since she was 4 months old? And she's 5, by the way, 5 years old.
Very little. Unfortunately, the law is very favorable toward biological parents and quite unfavorable toward grandparents. To try to obtain custody of the child, which is the only way you could, a person could have the grandparents could have the child stay with them, they would have to prove that the mother is unfit or there were exceptional circumstances, and those are very difficult to prove.
Okay. She, by the way, she is going through a divorce, which is nowhere near finalized, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it or, you know, if I can get her soon-to-be ex-spouse on our side, that he doesn't want his child living with some man he doesn't know kind of thing.
Well, the child's father has a lot more rights than grandparents in general, so the father would have at least a better chance of preventing the child from moving out of state in the custody portion of the parent's divorce case.
The father
the father doesn't live in the state anymore.
All right, well, that's going to be a difficult one.
Yeah.
All right, Leanne, I think that answers your question, but that, you know, that's why I wanted to get to that and hear what you had to say there. Ruth in Mount Airy, how can we help you? We've got a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Yes. 16 years ago, I had a baby with a man which we did not marry and who gave me full custody of our daughter. He's been actively involved in her life, and we get along wonderfully. But we never had a child support agreement. At the time, he was financially strapped, and I was doing very well, so I just kind of let it go, and he could pay for diapers or this or that over, you know, whatever he could do. Well, now, 16 years later, I am financially strapped, and again, we've never executed a child support agreement. My understanding is that child support is really the right of the child, not either parent. So I'm wondering if, after all this time, if it's possible to even begin asking for child support or go.
All right. We got to get Farrier's answer. Farrier, I only have a minute, so go ahead.
So with a 16-year-old, the mom still has the right to get child support, and that mom needs to file in court as quickly as possible and or go to the local child support enforcement agency as quickly as possible to get the child support started, and it will go until the child is 19 or graduates from high school, whichever comes first.
All right, and Ruth?
Can you do retroactive?
No, not further back forward than when you first file for child support.
Okay.
All right, Ruth, good question.
All right,
sorry
you
have to run. Farrier, you were fantastic. I only expected three or four people to get the bravery up to call and ask questions, but they filled the lines immediately.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, who are so knowledgeable about finances and family finances, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience.
All right, Farrier, great. Farrier Stillman, Tidings in Rosenberg. We're going to be back next week. Timmy will be doing the show. Eileen Ambrose, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Radio 680.